This town needs an enemy.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Get out!
I can't wait to show you Lunch's toy.
Help me.
That's not hello.
Do you mind?
The Batman?
No, you, in the car. It's part of the Batman.
What is up, everybody? You're listening to Wing Talk on Rainman Digital. Remember, you can always catch us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. When you find us there, like, rate, review, subscribe, do all those wonderful things for us. I'm the one and only Bobby D, and with me in the studio today is Steven.
What's up?
And Michael.
Yo, yo.
And today is probably, I might cry a little bit, not going to lie. We're going to talk about my Batman roots.
All right.
Because it's the 30th anniversary of Batman 89. I'm going to cry mainly because this is what got me into Batman, and I'm old as fuck now.
How old were you when
30,
it came out?
I was 9 years old when this came out. This was my introduction to Batman. This is what Batman was to me. This, you hear, and Steve kind of knows the story. Kevin Smith will tell a story about he was a Batman fan, but he was a Batman 66, and somebody introduced him to, I don't even remember what the comic book was.
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns, and it changed the way he thought about Batman.
Yeah.
Batman 89 is that for me, because I always thought it was this campy thing.
Same.
That brought me... You know, that I would watch after TV or after school on TV, mm-hmm. because Batman 66 was on every day.
Yep.
And Batman 89 was it for me. That's what turned me around. That's what got me into this. It's probably the reason I'm behind this microphone today.
So interesting side note to that. Same for me. But again, we all grew up in the same year, right? We all are the same age. When 89 Batman came out, I distinctly recall my mom and dad having a discussion going, that's not what Batman looks like. Batman's not all black. They screwed it up. His costume's wrong. Because they grew, you know, my dad introduced me to the old Batman blue and gray, what he grew up on, what he knew. But as we all know, Batman did start out black and gray originally. But it just shows you the generational differences in understanding and how close you are or aren't to the subject matter. But I will never forget that. So same, we in my mind's eye, Batman was this one thing, and because that's what I was exposed to.
It was like a light switch for you.
Yes, and then it went dark, and yes. I liked it.
Yeah, we didn't say it turned off or on. It was a light switch.
It was a light switch.
Mike, what did Batman 89 mean to you?
It meant that I couldn't see it until I was old enough, because my mom wouldn't let me see it, because she's all, this isn't Batman.
So you had the same kind of thing.
Yes, my mom's all, that's not Batman. Batman's fun. This is adult. There's women with tight dresses. There is a maniacal Jack Nicholson, who was a no-no back then for a lot of people that were more conservative with their movie choices.
Okay.
I was not allowed to see it. However, I ended up seeing it.
My dad took me.
No, I saw it at a friend's house. Well, not a friend's house. I was locked out of my house because someone had broken into our house when we were left alone as kids. My mom was working, single mom. And we went over to the neighbor's house to stay, and it was on HBO. Oh. It just had come to HBO. We sat down and watched the entire movie. To this day, my mom doesn't know I watched it.
Wow.
Yeah, Rebel.
Do we want to cut this out?
Yeah.
So I got...
She could be listening right now.
So I got lucky. My mom's sister, my aunt, she bought me the novelization before the film.
I had the book too.
Yeah, before the film had came out. And so I had already read the book, and some of the words, I was 9, 10. I didn't know how to necessarily say some of these words because they were written how people would speak them.
Was
right?
It just as dark as...
Oh, darker. And I read that thing 2-3 times before the movie came out. So it was my birthday present, you know, from the aunt. And yeah. I remember that was my first, like, holy shit moment.
So for me, my dad used to preview movies before he would ever take me when they were, like, PG-13
oh, really?
And stuff. So he had watched it beforehand. I was in Berlin, Germany at the time, so I saw it later. because movies weren't released in the American theaters.
Was it in German?
No. Okay. I was in the American sector.
It's brought in the Village Batman.
Yes, that's exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come over here.
Come over here, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all we know is yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ich bin nein.
I'm going to pop you up, yeah? Come here.
It turns into a Hannes and Franz thing. Yes, that's exactly what I saw. And then I came back to the States. I was like, holy shit, that was not the Batman I saw in the theaters.
Terrible dub job.
Yes.
I'm glad you said dub job.
So I had watched it over there, and it just was one of those movies that changed my life. Honestly, you hear people talk about things like Star Wars and like that in some other movies. Like that. Batman 89 was that thing for me that got me into like this just weird obsession with Batman.
That summer, particularly because, again, it was an onslaught. Like, it was fucking everywhere. And I lived in a small town. At the time, I lived in a town, 5,500 people, really small in Illinois. And the county fair came that year, you know, every summer. And it was right not too close or not too far from my house. And I would ride my bike down every day with my allowance that I would earn during that whole week the county fair was in town.
Listening to the soundtrack as well?
Listening to the soundtrack.
On your Casio Walkman?
Yeah. Well, Sony.
Walkman.
Listen to the Sony Walkman.
Somebody was rich.
Because I did get the audio tape from my girlfriend, my air quotes girlfriend in school. That was my birthday present from her.
Steve's banging girls at night. Yeah. That's a humble brag right
to this
there.
Song.
Yeah. Party man. I was listening to this. I was buying buttons and pins that I still have to this day at my house that I put on my baseball cap that was Batman, because of course it was. And that song that he's playing.
I could see Steve like boning some chick, like posing like Christian Bale style in American Psycho to this song.
Yeah, at 9.
I know it. Yeah, at 9. And she was 32. Oh. No.
Oh my God. So I don't think Steve realizes yet. He might want to talk to somebody. I think you were actually raped.
Well, in this day and age, you're on news for that. And we're all wondering why you told anybody. Way to keep it quiet.
No, the public.
He thought it was a sexual experience. He was molested as a child.
He's going, I hate Batman now.
Hey, bro, that wasn't sex, dude. You.
No, man. They would blast this
Nicole's
shit.
Nicole's listening right now. She'll suddenly, the things he's into makes sense
everything
now.
Everything makes sense.
I want you to make me cry, please, and suffocate me to near death.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We need to have an extra waiver disclaimer at the beginning of this one.
Yeah. No, they played this at the public pool like every day. The bat dance. Yeah. Right.
I don't care what anybody says, dude. This soundtrack is legit. To this day, it's good. Does it date the movie a little bit? Yes. But I think we all know what era this movie came out in.
The only song on the soundtrack that I kind of didn't care for and still don't is The Arms of Orion.
I don't remember that one.
It's the love ballad.
Oh
yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I agree.
It's the only one. But Party Man, hell yeah. Bat Dance, give it to me.
Vicky Vale.
Yeah.
You know, and they cut in. So let's talk about that a lot, because you're right. That soundtrack was probably one of the first, if not the first tape that I ever received.
Mine too. I think it was one of my first, one of the first albums I actually purchased on my own.
I didn't, again, I got it as a gift, but I had like the Beach Boys Endless Summer and
Beach Boys.
This. Hey man, the Beach Boys.
So this is the.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that you knew the names of the songs.
You don't know how many times I've listened to this goddamn soundtrack, man. I played the shit out of it.
And I just think the type of influence that it had on people our age. Because when you talk to, you know, say somebody like Lauren or Paul, I don't think they understand it, or they feel it the same way I do, because this was groundbreaking for superheroes. It made it, Superman was out there, but I don't think it broke the ground that this did.
Well, so that, again, looking back at how my mom and my dad was much cooler like he would take me to see things like Demolition Man when mom was like, no R-rated. Dad's like, let's go see Demolition. Let's go see Die Hard. I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go. Dad was cool like that. But coming off the Christopher Reeve Superman, which I grew up on as well, that was kind of my mom's view of comics, were those more happy-go-lucky, good message, feel-good type things. And this wasn't that at all. And at that age, we hadn't seen anything since Superman, so we hadn't seen any comic stuff. And then out of nowhere, here comes Batman, something that we never thought could ever be made into a movie. Yeah. And here it is.
Well, it was a game changer in a big way for a lot of things, because it was, you know, just kind of setting aside the comic book aspect for a moment, but just from a cinematic point, it's a piece of cinematic history that revolutionized and changed cinema and pop culture forever. Mm-hmm. Because yes, Superman came out, and yes, it was a big hit, but Superman fit the mold of that era. It fit the mold, the feel good of most mainstream films. Batman went against the grain. Mm-hmm. 1989, these were not the type of mainstream films that people went to the theater to see. It was dark. It was brooding. It was sinister. It was villainous. There was murder. There was death. There was mayhem. People being fried by funny hand buzzers. And to this day, that scene is disturbing. That was not mainstream entertainment.
It wasn't, unless you looked at like kind of the action films, you know, Aliens.
But you weren't taking your kids to see that.
No. Families
weren't loading up in the van
right.
to see those. Yes, there were kids that did, but for the most part, parents didn't let their kids see those movies. People thought Batman, let's go see it. And it changed the appetite.
It's a recognizable name.
Yes.
When you look at what came out that year in 89, it was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Abyss, which was dark for most.
That's a good year. Holy shit.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, The Little Mermaid, Dead Poets Society, When Harry Met Sally, Lethal Weapon 2.
That's better than the last 10 years of movies.
Oh, my God. That's a good year.
It gets better. Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Yep.
Uncle Buck.
Yep.
Do the Right Thing.
I don't remember that one.
It's Spike Lee.
Spike Lee.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was like, are you serious?
Weekend at Bernie's.
Yep.
Roadhouse.
Yep.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes.
Back to the Future 2.
Oh, my God.
Field of Dreams.
Can we go back?
Born on the 4th of July. I mean, it just goes and goes and goes.
Can we go back to 1989? That's when movies were good.
Pet Sematary, Tango and Cash.
Wow.
I mean, Driving Miss Daisy, dude, it just goes on and on. Christmas Vacation.
That makes you realize how shitty
the movies are
today.
Oh my God, Major League, The Burbs. I mean, guys,
The
Burbs too.
Wow.
I mean, it was just a banner year for us as kids to see these types of films, and then boom, here's Batman, clearly the odd man out.
Very different tone, and it did change the appetite of audiences. It really did. There was a calling for this type of thing after there was lots of complaints. I remember there were news reports, you know, the typical Phil Donahue type shows where people complaining about the violence and what they were calling a kid's movie. Why are you making movies like that? People forget that just because we didn't have social media back then with people bitching and complaining, there were other avenues that people did these things.
Yeah.
And you would have the religious groups coming out complaining about this movie. That's the reason why I wasn't able to see it. Because my mom said, this group said it had this, this, and that. I'm like, Mom, do you believe in that religion? No, but they said that it has this and that in it, and I just don't want you seeing that.
Entertainment Tonight, I remember, would run stuff, you know, not their perspective, but run stories about different, like what you're saying, Mike,
and
Phil Donahue. You really can't get by with that shit nowadays.
No.
I don't think, because you have the ability to just fact check on your own.
Yeah,
the Google machine has made things a lot easier.
Yeah, so I don't. It still pops up here and there, but reflecting back on it, we've come a long way in what people are exposed to by comparison.
Well, and you said revolutionary when it came to the movie. Not only the movie, but let's talk about casting choices. Let's start with Batman in general.
Right.
Yeah.
Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Your Beetlejuice.
Mr. Mom
is the thing. It's like, there is no way that this man could be. And I mean, we have these arguments on our shows now. Can this person be Batman? Could this? And we always got to look back to Michael Keaton as somebody at that time, and Steve, you could probably go through his movies beforehand.
Yeah.
What he was known for was not any kind of let's describe Bruce Wayne in Batman real quick. Brooding, playboy, aristocrat type person, like, you know, well off. And you don't see Michael Keaton as like a handsome man that would be a person that you would see fitting this role.
I wouldn't say he's an unattractive man, but he was not Ben Affleck chiseled.
Okay, hold on. Back then, actors were not given the opportunity to break what people called back then typecasting. There's not really typecasting anymore because of streaming services and all the different avenues to make movies. But back then, typecasting was a real thing that ruined careers for some actors because they always had to do the same thing. Going from comedy roles and rom-coms was near impossible in the 80s. Near impossible. And the fact that Michael Keaton broke through that bullshit and gave us a convincing portrayal of Bruce Wayne and Batman, I mean, that says a testament to Tim Burton's casting abilities and his eye for talent, because I don't know any other director that would have the balls back then to go for that and then convince the studio, this is our guy. How do you convince the studio?
Steve Guttenberg as Green Lantern.
I mean, essentially, that's what they did.
Yeah.
In fact, there was an article, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, and they took comics and said, if you were to cast, who's that stupid guy? Spader.
Okay.
From SNL? James Spade.
James Spade. If you take James Spade, and they had a other list of comics.
David Spade?
David Spade. There we go.
Yeah, we'll get it eventually.
I was like, I'm so confused right now because I was like, okay, what about Spader?
David Spade and I believe Jim Carrey and a few other comics that lined up. Mm-hmm. And they said, this is the equivalent of what they did with Michael Keaton in 1989. Mm-hmm. This is try to convince people that David Spade is Batman. And that's what they had to overcome with Michael Keaton, and they did it.
And when you look at that, I think that had an impact, obviously long-term in movie making and even television, because think about Tom Hanks in Big versus when he did Castaway or Apollo 13.
Or Road to Perdition.
There you go. Bingo. Or even Jim Carrey. I mean, yeah, he's always been the funny guy, but he did Number 23, which is dark.
But a lot of that would have been made possible if it wasn't for this right here.
Yeah, so
it was a game changer.
Yeah, and you're right. It shows something that the talent that Tim Burton has to be able to create basically Batman.
Yeah, he had the eye. That's a skill that a lot of people don't realize. A good director has, I could see this guy when no one else can. I can.
So for me, I still think Keaton as the best Batman.
Oh, man.
This is the way I look at it.
I don't disagree.
When you look at it today and they have the rumors about Batman Beyond and they're like, Michael Keaton could play old man Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, give it to me.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I will still buy that because he's great. He's aged well. And he still looks like Bruce Wayne to me.
Yeah.
So I would completely when they throw out those rumors of, and then he goes and does that I am Batman thing all the time. It still gives me fucking chills.
Yeah.
That makes an impact. I don't look at Christian Bale and go, that's my Batman.
There is something about Keaton. He had a cool guy swagger that I don't think any other actor had. Now, they tried to capture that with the Clooney casting because Clooney has the cool guy vibe. But, he does. But it didn't translate over.
It's nothing as cool as them looking at the armor and Alfred coming in and you kind of get that first interaction. It's like, well, how many cases do we need? Six. Yeah, go get six cases.
Yeah.
And it's just such a, like, again, that word didn't exist back then, but such a swag about him.
Yeah.
That you're just like, yep, that's it. Like, he pulled off that Bruce Wayne side and he still has that to today when, again, you see him on some of the talk shows and he will pull it out every once in a while.
Well, and the challenge is you got to have somebody that can do do the rich playboy in the nice Armani suit and then be good under the cowl. And when they started 89 Batman, the opening scene on the rooftop of the muggers,
a boner every time.
And that top down shot looking down at that rooftop, and you see his shadow as he turns into the light, and that cape is clearly animated in post, but whatever. When he turns out, that just that shot alone sets the tone of where this is going. And then when he grabs that guy, what are you? I'm Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, it kicks that motherfucker in the chest. Like, oh my God. Like you said, it gives me a boner, Mike.
Dude, I love that scene.
So good.
It's such a good moment.
And it sets the tone. And I think that's right where you get pulled in. It didn't fuck around.
No, and you believe right there, he is Batman.
You're like, that ain't Mr. Mom anymore.
No, that's not Mr.
Mom. He's not making grilled cheese with a fucking iron.
No.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I got chills right there.
And you're right. We talked in one of our previous episodes about, you know, sound design and how it makes something so much better with a theme, mm-hmm. and not just getting overrun by, you know, big pows and bangs and everything else.
It had a very powerful, even from the opening title sequence.
Danny Elfman, he's God, dude.
He is a God. And just the way they chose to to run the camera through the logo as if you were kind of, you didn't know what it was until that final panning of the camera out and the logo twists and you see it and you're like, oh wow, this is not 66 Batman.
No, this isn't. Yeah, we're not going to get a bunch of signs on everything that says Batpole.
No, yeah. In fact, I pulled up from one of the articles you had. Just the him standing in front of the TV monitors in the Batcave and the look and the design of the Batcave, you believed it was the Batcave.
Yeah. And
this is what it should look like.
Yeah, exactly. The other casting I think was interesting was like Jack Nicholson had played, you know, psychotic type characters before now.
Yeah.
And he was definitely probably the biggest name coming into this.
Mm-hmm. He's what got the movie made and what convinced the studio to put Michael Keaton in that role. He was the balance. All right, we'll give you Jack Palance and Jack Nicholson. You give me Michael Keaton. I guarantee you that was the backroom deal that was made.
Yeah. For me, his Joker it is so weird because you... Growing up, I really thought this was the origin story for real for Batman. That Joker
fell into the bat because...
Well, and had killed his parents.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, I really thought this was it. And I think...
Well, they changed it to tell the story that they were telling.
Yeah.
And it worked for the story they were telling. But I agree with you, for the longest time, because you're a kid, you don't have access to all this back catalog.
Yeah. But the casting in general was spot on, and the dude really had the look of Batman, you know, and a lot of that was due to the prosthetic that they put on his face.
But he didn't necessarily 100% need it either, because you go back and look at his crazy ass grin from like The Shining, for example,
mm-hmm.
or even, what is it? Witches of Eastwick or what? Wasn't that the one that he was in?
You're asking about horror films, and there's a million hours
of comedy.
It's a comedy.
So
leading up into that movie, he had already been in about 30 films.
Yeah.
And from 1958, all big movies. And the one you're talking about, The Witches of Eastwick, came out in 1986.
Yeah.
Broadcast News followed that up. Iron Weed, Heartburn, Freezy's Honor, Terms of Endearment, The Border, Reds, Postman Always Rings Twice, The Shining. These are all The Last Tycoon.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Yep. I mean, mm-hmm. that is prime Nicholson. And he had the ability to play crazy because he's not exactly not crazy himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we all know that superhero movies are pushed by villains. That a lot of times the heroes aren't the stars of the film. And I want to say between Keaton and Jack that it was a 50-50 split.
It was balanced.
Yeah.
As all
things
should
be. That's what 50-50 means.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In some, you know, forms of math.
I don't know. It means half?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Spanish too.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Such assholes. So where does he rank amongst the, you know, the cinematic Jokers? Because Heath Ledger.
Come on, this is hard, dude.
Yeah, no, it's, that's the point. That's what I'm here for.
It's so hard.
He's asking the hard-hitting questions.
Yeah, I know.
So
now, who is brave enough to say that he is the Joker?
Oh, man. Okay. His portrayal, I thought, was good.
Yes.
The story behind it isn't bad, but I feel like the story behind Heath Ledger is a bit better.
Yeah, agree.
Because they didn't bother to explain it. I don't feel like Joker has never really needed to be explained. And yes, they didn't really explain. No, they did explain Joker's craziness.
They did very much explain it.
He had an origin story. He fell into a vat of acid and came out crazy and deranged.
Well, even beyond that, like what Bobby was saying, he allegedly in this version killed Bruce's parents in the alley.
Yeah.
And then falls into the vat and then, you know, steals Jack Palance's girlfriend and offs him
and then fucks up her face
face. It is very dark, but
he just wants to make art.
You gotta break some omelets.
You gotta break some eggs.
He's so scary. And that's one thing. Heath Ledger wasn't scary. He was volatile.
He was chaotic.
He was unpredictable, but Jack Nicholson's Joker is scary when he's all, "You are my number one." And he's just massaging the guy's shoulders. You know, it's just like, what are you going to do? Are you about to kill him?
Or kiss him?
Yeah. Like, what are you doing? You're massaging his shoulders. It's so intimidating and scary.
I think the reason a lot of in my head that the 89 Joker is my Joker compared to the Dark Knight is because of cosplayers. And watching people try to portray that and lick their lips and do that weird shit, it throws that off for me.
So it ruins it for you.
Yeah.
One guy that does it, and you know who I'm talking about, that does it 100% perfectly with the Heath Ledger Joker. There's one. There's a lot of people that want to be that.
Yeah.
And then there's one guy that is him.
But that Joker has been so overdone for me.
And there, I agree.
I think being a con goer and seeing cosplayers dress up in the nurse's costume and do all that stuff that just takes it over the edge for me of like, all right, I'm tired of seeing this.
Also fan films, a lot of Batman fan films that are out there. They're all trying to do that Heath Ledger Joker. And it's just overplayed with that kind of snap of the head and the kind of loose movement. It's just like chaotic movement. I would agree that it has tarnished Heath Ledger's performance, but if you try your hardest just to watch that movie, you can't argue that he's an amazing Joker. He is. And I like his story better, as I said. So, dude, this is a hard one, man, because I don't think
there's a wrong answer.
Yeah, because it comes down to...
Because you could probably...
They're very different.
If we were to Cisco whiteboard this bitch, there would be, you know, pros and cons on both sides.
I like them both for different reasons.
Yeah.
They both satiate different cravings that I have.
And I don't think that's wishy-washy. I think that's fair because they are two very different portrayals. Now, if you were to compare Christopher Reeves with Brandon Routh's Superman, then you can probably make that comparison and say which one did better because in all actuality, Brandon Routh did essentially a parody of Christopher Reeves. He was mimicking him.
Yeah, he was trying to be that, but it just didn't come off well.
Right. Whereas with Jack Nicholson and Heath Ledger, it's just two very different people, different versions of Joker.
Right. What you won't hear me and probably Mike say is that we loved Jared Leto's Joker.
I was okay with it. I didn't love it.
You won't hear that from me.
The only reason why, and this is something that Paul said on the show a few weeks ago, and I agreed with his comment about that. It's not fair to, there was more to it. And I agree with that. If you've listened to interviews, one of the biggest reasons why Jared Leto went apeshit on the WB and went crazy on social media is because they're supposed to be hours of footage. He says, "I don't know what happened to my movie. What happened to my role? This isn't the movie I shot." He's all, "Where's all the footage explaining my story?" So he was very upset. So I feel like judging Jared Leto's performance as Joker in that movie isn't necessarily fair because we didn't even get the full picture because of the cut job they did to Suicide Squad. for all we know, there may be some justification behind why he went that route and what was the deal with some of the choices they did.
Well, everyone points back to the that comic that Jim Lee drew. I think it was Jim, where he's all tatted up with the dragon or whatever. And,
yeah, get in that mic. Don't get too sexy with us.
That version of Joker doesn't work for me on paper.
Yeah.
Let alone on film.
That's fair.
But, you know, Jack Nicholson's Joker works for me big time. Just the design of the costume. The prosthetics aside, just the design choice of the costume, and Tim had a huge hand in all of that. I used to collect the little, you know, back in the day when people actually collected cards of things, baseball cards and such. They had a 89 Batman card line, and a lot of the cards that you could get weren't just stills from the movie like they were with Empire Strikes Back and Jedi cards and stuff. They had a lot of his sketches, like his concept sketches and concept art of all sorts of different stuff, including the Joker. And it was just amazing because he came from an animation background, right? He came from he was an artist and an animator before he got into film. And you can see how that he could just visualize that and envision it in his head and get it down on paper like most directors can't really do or don't do.
Yeah.
And he did it. He storyboarded himself, you know.
So let's talk about some of the other characters. Vicky Vale. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Weighs more than 110 pounds.
108, I think.
Well, is that what it is? I don't think there was a bad casting in this thing.
What are you laughing at?
I forgot that line, which he lies to him about.
How much
he
weigh?
108, I think.
So
she is so hot.
And then he's like, you weigh a little more than 108. Dick. Never tell that to a woman.
Yeah. He's Batman, dude.
I know what this shit's rated for.
Right.
It ain't for me and you. So was there any kind of casting that you had an issue with? What, you know, even like the henchmen and all that were real memorable.
Bob the goon.
Oh, come on.
I loved.
I was like, don't you talk shit about me.
You are my number one.
No, he's fantastic. Eckhart, loved. He was kind of like what we got from the cartoon.
Hey, Eckhart.
Guy. Yeah.
Blows him away.
Think about the future. He, awesome choice.
So many great lines. We all remember the moment you bring up just a single character.
Well, that's the thing. I think this shows the impact of the movie. It wasn't about some kind of long overdue monologue. It was those comic book zingers that we are so used to seeing inside of a bubble.
Also, yeah. I've watched that movie as many times as I've watched like Star Wars.
Money, money, money. Who do you trust? Hubba, hubba, hubba. It's just,
money.
I could go on and on. Like the lines I can quote from Batman probably rival the lines I can quote from Star Wars.
Same. But going back to Commissioner Gordon is probably the only casting choice.
Do you remember that?
I'm just going to start reading characters' names and see if Mike can fucking come up with lines.
Shine the lights up. All right, let's go.
Let's go.
He says it just like that, too.
Well, and it's like you talk about what's his name? The writer, the journalist. Why can't I think of his name? God damn it.
Dimwit. He's the only person I didn't really care for. Talking about Vicky Vale's.
His name?
Jesus.
He's like, hey,
Wheeler or something?
Alexander Knox.
Knox,
okay.
Yeah. What a dick.
That's right.
I used to listen to that as a kid and go, he's a dick.
I never liked him very much.
Yeah, but there's so much. Again, I just don't think the casting, like, there was nothing in.
Nothing that ruined anything.
That
everyone was good.
Stood out. But even 30 years later, you watch it. And you're not like, oh, that's late 80s acting right there. That's bullshit. You know?
Okay, I'm going to sound like an idiot. Billy Dee Williams was actually Harvey Dent in this one, too.
Yeah.
How come I don't remember him?
He's when they do the mime thing.
Yeah.
And the pen is mightier than the sword. And he throws it at the dude.
Is he the one that says ghost and goblins?
Yeah, ghost.
Okay, that's right. Okay. I thought that was the second one for some reason.
And he's also at Bruce's house during Bruce's little soiree.
Yeah, I get Batman Returns and you know, when you watch movies over and over and over, you start getting some of them mixed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I do remember him in it then.
So, you know, I want to say the casting was damn near perfect. They didn't run out and try to grab the big 80s names. You didn't see, you know, the huge action stars.
Kim Basinger was pretty big at the time, and she was also married to Alec Baldwin at the time.
There was the like I said, backroom deals. You know, you give us Michael Keaton, and we'll allow Kim Basinger, Jack Palance, and Jack Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was Tim Burton trying to
we'll
go
get
for
names,
no names.
You give me this,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. And that's the kind of director Tim Burton was back then. He wanted to put more of those. He had his own go-tos. He had his own obscure actors that he liked to use. He wanted to make his own stars.
It's very Tarantino.
Yeah, very much so. Directors like this, when they have a style, stylized directors, they usually have their go-tos.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And it worked for him for many, many years, right? I mean, the casting
cast
choices.
His wife and everything.
Well, that's when it started to go a little sideways. But, I mean, the number of films where he had his go-to people. He had his Keaton. He had his Johnny Depp. And Depp did fantastic in films for him. Mm-hmm. It's just that film, though, the casting was phenomenal. And the set design, even though we saw the Batmobile go around.
So I think it's time for a quick break.
Okay.
And then we'll get back into set design, props, all those wonderful things that we remember.
Okay. Fair.
All right, we're back. I promise you we get right back into that set design conversation because I want to say this is the first time I can solidly remember like Gotham being bigger than life and the mix between the animation and the real life buildings.
Well, a lot of matte paintings.
Yes.
There was lots of matte paintings, old school style, like Star Wars films where you had the models. They built a lot of big scale models and then put them in front of the matte paintings, and then they would build out the huge set pieces.
Because Gotham is just as much of a character to Batman.
It's its
own thing. And if Gotham doesn't fit, the movie doesn't fit. And I think that's you know, we look at things like Batman and Robin, and when it went from this dark brooding place to this cartoonish type.
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, I was going to say Jetsons.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with that.
You know, where it just kind of, you know, the multi-tiered trains and all that other stuff. And they lost that, and, you know, when they moved on. But it was such a big character in 89
mm-hmm.
For me. Whether you talk about, you know, Wayne Manor, the Batcave, you know, any of that stuff is what I picture as Batman and Gotham.
Well, and it is, and even to this day, because they carried that theme into the animated series, which also was a brilliant thing for us as kids. But when they, I forget what they call that it's dark something in the animated world, but it's that noir look and very. Dark Deco.
Mm-hmm.
It's Art Deco, but with a really dark twist. And all of the Burton films had that. And I'm a huge Art Deco fan in terms of architecture and design.
I agree. Yeah, me too.
And to see that as a kid, maybe that's why I love it so much, was that's where that seed was planted. And the way that they handled that and made these larger-than-life buildings. And that being said, the streets of Gotham in front of the Monarch Theater. We saw the same corner about 62 times in that film as they shot from different angles the same set piece on the back lot. So if you pay attention, you'll see the same thing over and over again. But God damn it, they built something out.
Yeah.
It was a real thing.
It was alive. It should have got a credit at the end.
Yeah. It wasn't just as simple as let's go to downtown Chicago and shoot on Lower Wacker Drive, which I still appreciate. This was a
set. Is there an Upper Wacker Drive?
There is. Oh. There's an Upper and Lower Wacker.
Yeah, I will say that the art direction and the set design, the overall production design for this movie is what really did the trick in transporting the audience to this mm-hmm. different world, which needed to be done. Again, this isn't... this isn't 2015, 2019, where we're used to those larger-than-life, surrealistic worlds. this is 1989. This is something entirely new. They needed to do just enough to make us know that this isn't quite our world. This is a fictional world. This is Batman's world. And the way they were able to transport the audience there with these set pieces was amazing. And the work that was done by Les Tompkins, and it, just fantastic work. He worked on The Shining, Full Metal Jacket, Jewel of the Nile.
Hmm.
1492 Conquest of Paradise, mm-hmm. which was not a great movie, but a fantastic set piece of a film. Just beautiful cinematography, beautiful backdrops, beautiful settings. Judge Dredd, the original 1995. Sleepy Hollow. 47 Ronin. Troy.
That's a
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
That is a wide body of work that's yeah. so varied and different.
Yeah, but it's all big and unique.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about who you put in those positions. And Tim Burton, yet again, bringing on someone that he knew would do the job. And that's why this movie stands the test of time. You can still watch it and not feel like it's dated. When you watch a comic book movie from 15 years ago, you kind of cringe sometimes at some of those CGI sequences.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But when you're watching Batman from 1989, you can still enjoy it with those practical effects and the beautiful matte paintings that they use in the background. Yeah, there might be a few that you can now pick out and say, oh, that's definitely a matte painting.
The balloons look like shit, but you're yeah. like, okay, whatever.
That's a model that they're flying with little blow-up balloons. Yeah. But I don't care. It's great.
Yeah, it's just fantastic, and it just lends itself to the overall motif of the picture. And I feel like that's why a lot of us just swallow it and say, you know what, that's the movies of the time, and it's fantastic looking. It's its own art in many ways.
And I appreciate again building that out. You know, you take Christopher Reeve's Superman, and there's a lot of reasons why that looks dated, primarily
oh, yeah.
the flying, even though at the time it was like, holy shit, the dude is flying. But because they grounded it in real life sets of mm-hmm. real cities, our cities don't look like that anymore.
No.
Right? We don't have newspaper stands out on the streets and telephone booths. Like, kids nowadays are like, there's a telephone booth? You know, we grew up, they still existed, but they don't exist
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah.
And so it very much dates it, but you didn't really see those things in 89 Batman. It was kind of its own city. And then when they did show vehicles of the area,
and you didn't know what date it was.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It was timeless because there was nothing to date it.
Well, you talk about the cars. There was nothing.
They were nondescript Ford Crown Vics that were painted different colors, like the Joker cars. Like, they were painted to look not what they were. And so you don't get that time stamp. You can go back to now today and watch it, and you feel like you're just watching a film.
So you brought up cars. Let's talk about the Batmobile.
Oh, that's my Batmobile. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. That is the Batmobile.
And I'm pretty sure that was a VW Bug, like, taped to a freaking Corvette. I'm not lying. I think if you look it up, the back end of it is a VW Bug, and the front end was a Corvette.
Oh, why you gotta ruin it for me?
Well, I knew everything. That primarily, it was
Herbie.
A Corvette chassis and a Corvette body. I didn't know that the back
end. I believe the back end was a VW
really?
Bug. Yeah.
Just
the way
with that.
The way it was rounded. Of course, you got a VW tattoo on your back.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
But you're right. That you talk about things that stand the test of time, and gave that over exaggerated look that you expect from a Batmobile. Like, I have no problem with the Tumbler today.
I don't. It's practical for the story that they were telling.
Yes, but it doesn't remind me of a real Batmobile that you see drawn in comics. Or, you know, represented today.
Those
you know,
fins. I mean, we grew up watching 66 Batman, which had fins. And this was, it had the Batwing fins on the back. And you're like, holy shit, that thing is, that's slick.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slick looking car.
And and I think the props were a huge part of it. And you brought up Batwing. And that was another thing, just one of the most memorable scenes of the first time you really got a bat signal.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he flies up into the moon and just pauses.
And they use that on the cover of the soundtrack, the orchestral soundtrack.
Yeah. And so they did such a good job with the, you know, bringing the gadgets and the bat computer, the cars.
The Batarang,
all the life.
Flings that open. And to throw it, you know, for the first time, or when he pulls out his grappling gun
And Vicky Vale's too fat.
And she's too fat and she can't go. Or even when he's in the museum and pulls out that one gun, you think he's going to blast Joker in the face. And then it springs out from the sides and it's like a zip line. Where does he get those wonderful toys? It's like, oh my God, it hits all the notes.
Yes. And it is such a, you know, you combined all this. You combine the actors, the soundtrack, the city, the props. It is pretty much one of the most perfect superhero films for me.
Mm-hmm.
To where it hits on all levels that I'm not ever disappointed. I feel like I could watch it at any time, any moment, pick it up and watch. It made you fear Jack.
Mm-hmm.
It made you believe that Michael Keaton was a badass.
Jack.
Okay.
Again, I think a whole episode of me just saying stuff and see if we can come up with quotes.
What happened to her face?
She said, I can watch you do art.
Oh, it's such a disturbing. I'm in trouble now.
But and memorable things that have stood the test of time. The last thing I kind of want to talk about before we're done is the merchandise.
Oh,
Like what kind you don't see? Well, you kind of see it, but it's a lot forced, more forced. I feel like,
and the
today.
Toys are shitty nowadays. Let's be honest. Unless you're buying the expensive ones that we can all afford now because we're adults, but you don't get the toys that we had when this film came out.
But let's just start with the cereal.
Oh.
They had Batman cereal.
It came with the bank.
Yeah, and you got a prize with it. You know, we talked about the novel. Soundtracks.
Did you get the cereal that had the holographic Bat logo on the front?
No.
Oh, man. So the one tie-in was the bank, you know, that came with the cereal. And then there was another one where you bought so many boxes you could send in and, like, 10 years later, it felt like when you were a kid, you would get the t-shirt in the mail, and I wore the shit out of that, and I took really good care of it. My mom threw it in the dryer, and it like bent the hologram on the, you know, it was
and
hard.
You ran away for 3 days.
Yeah. But no, those things I will never forget having them as a child. The Batman lunchbox had that.
Did you guys go to Taco Bell and have the 1989 Taco Bell commercial special? That was great. You guys don't remember Taco Bell was the original fast food joint that had the license?
I don't, because by the time Returns came around, McDonald's had it.
McDonald's had it.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I didn't.
I still remember. Taco Bell wasn't as big as it.
Well, that's
because it was back then.
Well, that's because it took a few years until Demolition Man came out, and then there was the Taco Bell resurgence.
Yep, that's when it all happened. Yeah.
I had the three set of the micro machines with the Joker van.
Same.
All those things are...
And the Ertl Batmobile that was metal because Hot Wheels didn't have it. It was Ertl.
It's just all those things that I remember growing up as being such like a big part of my childhood. That
huge part
I just don't see happening these days, or if it is, it's a complete money grab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you go right now and you can go in and look at Toy Story or Avengers Endgame and you just get overrun by how many toys they release.
Well, and in fairness, by the time Batman Returns had come out, they had more toys on the market. That whole Kenner line, I mean, I'll never forget, there was the one that literally the sculpt of the face looked like Michael Keaton, and you put on, he was wearing this weird tight, it looked like a tight shirt, right? But then you put on his armor over top of it, you put his cowl on, and boom, now you have Bruce Wayne turns into Batman. Brilliant, brilliant toys.
Yeah, and so they did such a good job on marketing that, you know, it wasn't a kids film, but they made kids want it.
Yeah.
Because between advertising and the toys.
Because it was PG-13.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nobody getting a heart pulled out of their chest like Raiders, but it was still pretty dark in a lot of respects.
That wasn't liked by the Christian Council of Concerning Kids, or I just made that up.
I'm sure it wasn't. But, I mean, we did see Jack electrocute a guy and his whole head turn on fire.
It was brutal, man. So, to this day, that's an intense scene still.
It is.
Yeah. So let's get into like some final thoughts on this. Mike, you want to start?
I love the movie. To this day, I can still pop it in and enjoy it. I don't feel like it's overly dated when I watch it. However, if I watch it with someone younger, it suddenly feels a little dated, but I still enjoy it. I feel like it's one of those cinematic achievements that will always be that movie that you can enjoy watching. This is before comic book movies became comic book movies. This is when movies, this is a respectable comic book movie. There, that's the easiest way to say it. It's a movie with a great cast and a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just keep it simple.
Cool. Steve?
Yeah, I agree with Mike. In fact, you know, I owned it on VHS. I owned it on DVD. I own it now on Blu-ray. And I'll be damned if they didn't recently have them all on HBO, like all of them. And even though I have it sitting on the shelf, I still on HBO.
It's on DCU.
I went, I pulled it up. And, you know, to Mike's point, Nicole is younger, so it doesn't have the same meaning for her. But I will still sit down and watch it today. No problem, and still be just as entertained as I was when I was a kid. It takes me back to that point in my time and all the merchandise. Like I showed you guys the pictures. It is a moment in time for me, a time capsule moment of good memories that I will cherish till the day I die.
Yeah, and that's how it is. I started off this show saying this was what introduced me into like my hardcore fandom of Batman and superheroes. And that this movie... Again, it makes me feel that it's the 30th anniversary because, you know, I don't look at myself as being that old, but fuck, I am.
It feels it some days when you wake up, you feel it, but
it is what got me started doing all this shit.
Yeah.
And introduced me to so many good people. I mean, like you, Steve and Mike, and you know, it's weird. These are the movies that have brought most of us together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in. Again, I don't know if movies this day has those like that kind of impact. You know, I could probably see maybe the Harry Potter series with some of those nerds. By the way, we'll have a fantasy cast for Harry Potter people.
I mean, dude, just look at us right now. Both of us are sitting here with laptops that have Batman stickers on our MacBooks.
Shit. I didn't realize.
And a Batman cup, and I have 17 Batman characters tattooed on my body.
Right.
And a daughter named after a Batman character.
And both of our houses are like shrines to Batman, literally.
So that's what Batman 89 means to us.
Yeah.
And so that's going to do it for this Batman retrospective of Batman 89 on Wayne Talk, Rayman Digital. Let us know what Batman means to you. Find us out there on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those wonderful things. And we'll talk to you next time.
Blah, 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 blah. All of that chit-chat's gonna get you hurt.
Oh, my God.